This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiaoyi. Now, just last week on the 26th of May, Deputy Health Minister Lukan Ismang Awang Sauni confirmed to the media that the Cabinet had approved the tabling of the Control of Smoking Product for Public Health Bill 2023 in the current parliamentary session, which will resume sitting on the 6th of June. So today is the eve of World No Tobacco Day, and it's the perfect opportunity to find out how this proposed bill will tackle the generational endgame proposal, as well as concerns that vaping is increasing among children and teenagers following the delisting of liquid nicotine from the Poisons Act 1952 at the end of March. So joining me in the studio to discuss all this, Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant respiratory physician and special advisor to the Minister of Health. Helmi, how are you?
Hello, thanks for having me again. I'm good. It's a bit of deja vu, isn't it?
It is, yes. It is. Not too long ago, we had you on the show talking about generational endgame when the idea was first floated. A lot of concerns, a lot of uproar over the proposal then. And I think it's been discussed and debated quite a fair bit in the media since then. Of course, former Health Minister KJ was very, very, adamant about trying to get it through in his tenure. So I guess thanks to him, really, we've managed to keep that level of discussion going. And of course, current Minister Dr. Zaleha has been, talking about it as well. But we want to find out more because there were so many concerns about the bill then from many different quarters. What will it look like if it is tabled in this current parliamentary sitting, and will have the concerns from the various quarters, will those be addressed? Call us with your thoughts or questions, whether it's about the bill, the generational endgame proposal, or about smoking and vaping in general. 03-7733-2900, the number to call. Or you can WhatsApp us at our U mobile number, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio as well. I just wanted to quote this statistic that I found. It's not recent at all. It's from a 2016 survey by the Public Health Institute, which found that almost 190,000 children below the age of 12 in Malaysia smoke cigarettes or e-cigarettes. Tell me, where and how are young people picking up smoking and vaping?
I would say that generally, not just in Malaysia, but globally as well, we're seeing a trend whereby the use of conventional or combustible cigarettes, the trend is going on, it's going downwards rather. And in terms of e-cigarettes or vaping, that's going upwards. And there are multiple factors to it. Primarily, there is the ease of access. There's also the marketing that children are exposed to, our youth are exposed to. And it is something that's trendy, it's colourful. If you look at the advertising and the marketing, it's always in some way that is attractive. You know, you've got cartoons, you've got imagery that portrays a certain type of lifestyle. So these are things that we have seen in the past decades ago when tobacco initially was out in terms of advertising, in terms of mass production. So I think we are seeing a repetition of that. And as a consequence, we're seeing children and youth becoming more exposed to e-cigarettes. And because there is nicotine, which is a very addictive substance, then we face a situation whereby children are getting addicted at a younger age. And as a consequence, they are potentially going to be lifelong or at least customers or consumers for a very long period of time.
Definitely, the products, the devices are made to look almost innocuous. Mm-hmm. They look like highlighters. They look like, just simple.
Pens, yeah, pens. Watches.
Yeah. I've seen ones made to look like cassettes, you know, that whole retro appeal there. And I think the marketing and the design packaging of it is something that I'm sure we'll get into when we talk about regulations. But we know for a fact smoking cigarettes is dangerous for you at any age, much less to children. What do we know about the dangers of vaping among children?
I would say that over the past few years, in fact, I would say, especially over the past 12 months, there's been increasing scientific evidence to highlight the damage that vaping or e-cigarettes does, not just to the body, but to individual cells as well. And this includes increased inflammatory responses, carcinogenic effects. And these are things that we are seeing in the short term. So in terms of children clinically, you're seeing things like bronchitis, you're seeing increased respiratory distress, and in some cases where there are inhalation of chemicals that produce a very specific response, you see inflammation that's going on to the extent that it causes fibrosis or scarring of the lungs. So these are things that we're seeing very much in the short period that we have had vape in the scene. What more in terms of medium to long-term problems? Because even with normal, so-called normal cigarettes, you tend to see the impact 10, 20 years down the line. So I think there's enough to suggest and to say that these things are not safe. But what we do not know at this point in time is really the medium to long-term consequences.
There have been over 30 cases of EVALI, electronic vape-associated lung injury, reported to the MOH. I'm pretty sure this is perhaps the tip of the iceberg, only what's reported. And has it been reported among children?
It's hard to speculate as to whether it's the tip of the iceberg or not, because we can only rely on what's being reported. But the fact that these things are in existence and they've been reported, and if I'm not mistaken, so over the past 12 months or so, then these are things that are obviously need to be taken seriously. And besides EVALI, where you have a very specific acute response which causes inflammation and once again ends up with causing scarring in the lungs, you can also get other problems in terms of bronchitis, but also in terms of like a pneumothorax, where your lung actually can collapse. So if you look at, I think over the past few months, you've seen on social media lots of kids. When I say kids, because I'm getting old now, I'm talking about people in their teens and 20s, not necessarily small kids, but those who have been vaping, sharing their experiences and actually telling people to not be taken into this whole concept of it being very benign, because they can actually share the consequences they're facing, having chest drains put in, which is, never a pleasant thing. Now, in terms of impact on children, I think once again, it depends on the definition, but I think we haven't really had any cases involving very young kids. What we are seeing is more youth in terms of teenagers and those in their 20s.
Probably because that's the age where something like this is the most attractive. Now, my concern is that effective 1st April, liquid and gel forms of nicotine were exempted from regulations so that they could be taxed. But that does mean that you can have vape devices containing nicotine being sold really unregulated. Kids can be buying them from warung, from mamas, from convenience stores. I've even heard anecdotal stories that they were available in Ramadan bazaars. Isn't this extremely dangerous?
I think you're right in the sense that this has something that has allowed people to access an item that is potentially, once again, addictive and also something that can cause lifelong addiction. And that scenario you've described has been in existence for many years. It's been openly available. It is something that is almost an open secret. And you have seen the industry thrive over the past few years because we've been talking about this issue probably since 2015, 2016, thereabouts. And we have seen, I think, between ourselves, how things have changed over the many years. And I think this reinforces the whole idea of the need for regulation. And this is why we were pushing very strongly when YB Kairi was the health minister in terms of getting appropriate regulation, but also finding that point in time where we stop people from getting on board. And the good thing about what's happening right now is that with YB Dr. Zaliha, you can see that it's not a political issue. It is a very much a medical public health issue that we have taken on board and we strive to continue and to make a success. And going back to your earlier point about all the various controversies that we've come across, some of it may be political, some of it is very much about perception. And I think there's also a lot of myths out there with regards to what is right or what is wrong, what is safe, what is unsafe, not just about vape, but also about cigarettes in general.
So that is what the proposed bill, wants to be able to set out to define and regulate. But right now, before that bill can even, it's not even tabled yet. It's past cabinet at least, but we have a void of regulations right now. Can the government do anything to immediately restrict the sale of vape devices to children?
I think that this is the exact reason why we have to push through in the in this current sitting of Parliament. We are going to go into Parliament next week. The idea is to push forward this particular regulation, to highlight to the public and to educate people with regards to the need for this regulation, because it involves not just the Health Ministry, but the entire Cabinet when it comes to pushing this forward. So next week or the week after that, depending on how things go in terms of scheduling in Parliament, we will be pushing and YB Dr. Zaliha will be presenting this bill in Parliament.
All right. So we'll come back from the break to find out what are the components of this. It is a new bill if we compare it to what YB Khairi had proposed last year. So we'll be getting details from Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin, consultant respiratory physician and special advisor to the Minister of Health, when we come back from our break. Meanwhile, call us with your questions or your thoughts. 03-7733-2900. If you'd like to WhatsApp, it's 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shawik. My guest in the studio with me today, Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin, Special Advisor to the Minister of Health and Consultant Respiratory Physician, the perfect person, actually, to be talking about the effects of smoking and vaping and what we need to do from a public health policy and a legal perspective when it comes to reducing tobacco, smoking, vaping, addiction. So before the break, we've started bringing up the Control of Smoking Product for Public Health Bill 2023. Such a mouthful, Helmi. and this is the new bill that has just been approved by Cabinet for tabling in the current parliamentary session, which resumes sitting next week, if I'm not mistaken, 6th of June. Tell us about this bill. What are the components of it?
I think first and foremost, there has to be recognition that the bill has evolved. As you mentioned before the break, the bill had various stakeholders wanting changes. They were commenting on ways to improve the bill. And of course, in retrospect, we can use that. And if we look at the silver lining to all the various debates, is that we are hopefully being able to present one that is more palatable and something that is going to make most stakeholders satisfied with the outcome. I can't go into the details until it's actually presented in Parliament, but I think the key thing that if you're wanting to get more details, the key thing would be the final report that was presented by the Special Parliamentary Select Committee that was commenced after YB Khairi had presented the initial first reading in Parliament last year, and it's a 400-over-page report. But essentially, there are lots of proposals within that particular report that looks at various things. So, for example, they have taken away possession as a punishable offence and has limited it to only use or sales of cigarettes to those who are born after the year 2007. There's been a change in terms of the amount from a 5,000 ringgit compound to 500 ringgit, which is actually less than what's currently being done for those under the age of 18. So all these things have been taken into consideration. And I think this is one key thing, because a lot of the perception that there may be out there, even now, is that things haven't changed, that this is that original bill that was out there. And talking to people, there's also some people who think that, oh, I'm going to ban smoking and vaping tomorrow, which is not the case. So I think one key thing is that, especially once the first reading of the bill has been done by YB Dr. Zaliha, we need to be even more proactive and more, I think, very, very kind of like aggressive in terms of our communication, so that people get the right perception and that there are no fake news about this.
So the generational end game part of it will remain in the bill. And that's what you said, that anyone born in the year 2007 or later will no longer be able to buy and use cigarettes or vape products in Malaysia. This is the generation that will turn 18 in 2025, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. What about the regulation of the general regulation of vape devices and its contents?
So there'll be two components to it. There'll be the aspect of the device itself, and then there'll be the aspect of the content. And once again, the details will be in the bill, and some of it will be under the remit of the minister in terms of the specifics. So, for example, what can be advertised, the type of advertising that's allowed, down to the details of colors, use of cartoon characters, things like that. And then, of course, there'll be the offenses when it comes to people purchasing or selling these things to those who shouldn't be able to afford them or shouldn't be able to have access to them, like our youth. So I think it's a very comprehensive and detailed proposal. And I think one thing to also remember and bear in mind is that there has been a lot of engagement with industry as well. So when it comes to the past year or so, we've got various input from players in the vape industry who generally are very keen on there being more regulation, because there are those, I would say, within the industry who are very much of a mindset that they are wanting to help people quit smoking through vaping. And we can have a separate debate about the ins and outs and the strengths of that argument. But there are those who are very keen to avoid youth from actually becoming vapers. So I think that industry on its own is something, or that concept by that industry is something that, you know, we feel should be recognized. And they are the ones who are very supportive of having appropriate regulations so that we limit and make sure that those who are currently not smoking or not vaping become addicts.
Will the contents of vape be regulated? Level of nicotine, the kinds of chemicals used, and to clamp down on adulteration as well?
Yes. So once again, the details will be specified at a later date, but we are definitely looking at the... I can't tell you everything. It's still embargoed.
I feel like Helmy is just going to plaster that on his forehead. The details will be revealed later.
I think I'll be fired from my job if I don't, you know, share the actual bill. But I think the key thing is, okay, so one would be that, yes, there is recognition that there has to be a limit to how many milligrams of nicotine. There has to be a limit in terms of what chemicals are allowed. And these things are dynamic, right? They're changing all the time. So we will have, for example, for the sake of an argument, maybe tomorrow we'll find that a particular chemical causes popcorn lung disease and that needs to be banned. So there will be, that the bill will allow the minister to intervene should such a circumstance occur.
I know that the use of vape for harm reduction to help in quitting is a whole big topic. But just very briefly now, as a respiratory physician, as a medical expert, where do you stand on the use of vape for harm reduction? And is that the approach that we will be taking in terms of when it comes to how vape will be allowed? You know, how could it be marketed? Who can use it?
By putting aside my policy hat, and I want to be a doctor. Not to be, I am a doctor.
I hope so.
Yes. So, you know, and patients ask me this question, but when you are prescribing medication, when you are giving someone advice, you have to go by the evidence that you have. It cannot be anecdotes. I can't say so-and-so got better from the pneumonia he had because somebody else took some antibiotic that worked. I have to go with the knowledge of what the problem is and what can or cannot work. Likewise, when it comes to vaping, the first concept, as always, is, of course, do no harm. So you do not want to cause additional harm, and harm may not always be the same. You know, when people say it's safer, it doesn't mean that you've got 10 things that you'll get from smoking, and then when you give someone an e-cigarette, then it goes down to 5. It's not as easy to translate as that. You don't actually know what's going to happen. And in some cases, you can actually cause more harm. So for example, I do actually have patients who've gone from normal cigarettes to e-cigarettes and got worse in terms of their asthma control. And this is not something that you can predict. So my point really is that because there isn't a sufficient evidence base and because it isn't 100% safe, you cannot promote that as a device that would help with people to quit smoking from a medical perspective. Out there in the community, lots of different anecdotes, lots of different arguments, and that is something that is at a more communal level rather than the face-to-face that we have in clinic when we see a patient.
We have a question here from a listener. Considering packaging restrictions on cigarettes seems to have little impact on smokers, on deterring them, I suppose. Do you think that restrictions, the similar restrictions applied to vape products, will make a difference?
Definitely. I would argue a little bit with that statement that it has little impact on smokers. we have to look at things in a more holistic way. So, for example, if we look at how cigarettes were packaged decades ago, it was very different from what you see today. A lot of people have this perception like, oh, look, you can see a miscarriage baby on a box of cigarettes, but it doesn't deter people from smoking. Now, it may not deter everyone, but it may deter some, and especially those who have never smoked. So there are different levels when it comes to tobacco control measures. And the understanding is that one single measure isn't going to affect everyone. You want to have all these multiple effects that work synergistically to overall have an impact in terms of those who smoke or do not smoke. Similarly, when it comes to vaping, you can see for yourselves how you've got cartoon characters. You've got all, as you mentioned before, all these different shapes and forms which are designed to be attractive. These are not, you know, it's all there by design. It's not something that has happened accidentally. And similarly, if you go to countries like the US, they have completely banned these items because they know that they have a very attractive effect on our youth. So moving away from that into something that's more plain, something that has got packaging that is more, that is not really about attracting youth, but more about existing customers, you could tell once again from evidence globally that it actually makes a difference. Mm.
But isn't that a case of sort of trying to close the door after the horse has bolted, because we are already in this very liberal space where vape devices, you know, it's free for all. You know, that's the reason they are thriving with the kind of packaging and design that, you know, they're using now. It's already sent out that perception that vape devices are harmless.
So I would disagree. I wouldn't say, okay, it may send that messaging to people at this point in time, but once again, coming in with the regulations, and I think more importantly, coming in with the right comms, with the right education, or rather education plan or campaign, it's very important. And perhaps that's something to mention as well. You know, KKM, or rather the Ministry of Health, is working very closely with the Ministry of Education, because we do have plans to actually engage people at a secondary school level to educate them about perception when it comes to marketing, when it comes to the use of these products. So yes, it's out there at the moment, but it doesn't mean we should just leave it be as it is.
Absolutely not. I just think you're more optimistic than I am in being able to, you know, change the tide of public perception.
I'm a doctor. I see patients who, you know, are stubborn all the time, but it doesn't mean I give up on them.
All right. On that note about sort of working with schools, targeting messaging and education at the teenagers, it's purely a social and, you know, thing, the reason why young people pick up vaping. And that was the case with smoking as well. It's the peer pressure around it. And currently, as it was in my time, and I think it's still the same, teenagers who smoke, and I think vape, they're treated as discipline cases, you know, if it is discovered in school. How do you think we can turn it around so that they can get support? I mean, basically, we're talking about treating an addiction and treating them like discipline cases. Discipline problems isn't going to, you know, really help them or provide support.
I think that begs a larger philosophical question, which I think we are currently heading towards. So even when we talk about drug addiction and whether or not people go to jail, whether or not we should automatically go for the death penalty, these are discussions that are being had at a higher policy level. And as you can probably see from the tone of the government and in the tone in terms of the politicians who are involved in these discussions, we are wanting to move towards a form of treatment rather than punishment. So it will take time, but I agree with what you're putting across, which is that, you know, when you find someone who is essentially addicted to a product, the concept shouldn't be punitive. It should be more about identifying a problem, trying to figure out the root cause of it. And it's not easy. It's far easier to just punish someone rather than spend time and actually go through things and educate them. And I do feel that you're absolutely right, is something we should strive towards.
The listener earlier has followed up with a message. Isn't it more difficult to come in later with the education now that some people think it's harmless? We've made more work for ourselves.
Coming later, again, now that people think it's harmless. Well, once again, I wouldn't say everybody thinks it's harmless. You're right in that a lot of people think it's safer. Or even if someone does feel that it or think it's harmless, it doesn't mean we can't change their perception or we can't educate them on the differences. So, for example, let's say, asbestos. Once upon a time, it was something that was used pretty much everywhere when it comes to construction because people thought it was something very cheap, something that actually did very well in terms of insulation. But the moment we figured out that it's actually carcinogenic and causes cancer, we went out on a campaign to educate people and to actually reverse the use of it. So it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not something that is going to be easy because once again, we're dealing with an addiction. But I wouldn't say that it's too late, and I am optimistic in the sense that I do feel that, you know, there's still the opportunity to get people to see the dangers. And I would argue that if you look at social media, if you look at the surveys that we have done, if we look, we recently had a Banama survey which looked at over 5,000 people. The vast majority of people are in agreement that more needs to be done to regulate because this is something that they understand and they appreciate is dangerous for their youth. So even smokers we meet, vapors we meet, they do not want their children to actually become addicts. So once again, I feel that it's not that they don't think it's not that people think it's harmless, but I do feel that more education needs to be done in terms of what can be done to regulate matters.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with smoking and the biggest barrier has always been the influence of the industry. And that's why it's taken decades for scientific evidence to sort of, you know, be able to come out on top of what the tobacco industry has been able to lobby and influence. Are we still up against that same level of influence?
I would think globally there's definitely been different levels of lobbying, different levels of interference when it comes to industry, some proven, some anecdotal. And even here in Malaysia, you do, I think not too long ago, there was a couple of guys who were quite blatantly and proudly showing how they are from the vape industry and they were in parliament meeting people. So that on its own is an indicator of the degree to which there's penetrance when it comes to meeting MPs. Now, one could argue that, you know, it's a democracy, everyone's free to meet whoever they want. But if we were to go by the FCTC ruling of the WHO, which we are signatories to, then there should be a limit in terms of discussions or meetings that are unrecorded when it comes to the industry.
All right. We will come back from this next break to discuss a little bit more about the proposed bill that will be tabled in Parliament. In the studio with me, Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant respiratory physician and special advisor to the Minister of Health. Call us with your questions, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 01-87-89-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my guest, Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant, respiratory physician, and special advisor to the Minister of Health. We're discussing the upcoming tabling of the Control of Smoking Product for Public Health Bill 2023, which we hope will be tabled in the current parliamentary session. They are resuming sitting next week. And that includes the generational endgame proposal, which is to prohibit anyone born in 2007 or later from buying and using cigarettes or vape products, as well as regulation of registration, advertising, promoting and sponsorship, packaging and sales of smoking products. Now, I'm surprised that nobody has messaged in about enforcement, because when we do shows about tobacco control, enforcement is always brought up. And we have seen evidence of weak enforcement in other areas of tobacco control. I still see people smoking openly in the mamats, in Tamantun, as I always like to call out. And I hope the officers will come and check them out. So,
how? Give me the details after this.
Yeah, I will. How will just Tamantun across the road, Jalan Burhanuddin, help me? How will any subsequent tobacco control laws be effective if we are constantly struggling with poor enforcement?
Enforcement, I would say, is an issue. It will continue to be an issue for everything. It's not just about smoking. If you look at, say, wildlife trafficking or even human trafficking, enforcement, I think, is an issue more in terms of governance and I think in terms of focus. So I wouldn't say it's specific to any one particular RUU or any one particular bill. Even when it comes to smoking in public spaces, you're absolutely right. it kind of waxes and wanes. So there'll be moments where it's like in the public limelight and, you know, there's increased enforcement. There'll be people who'll be going and doing stuff. And then suddenly it just quietens down. And if I were to look back, I think it's over the election period, right? It's just like post-election, I think there was a bit of chaos and everything seems to be like up in the air. And as a consequence, there seems to be a decrease in enforcement. Mm. But now you see there's an increase in enforcement, which I think is also a consequence of the people's voice. So this is where I feel is actually great that people do actually complain about things. People do highlight issues. We have DJs on radios talking about how there are mama shops in Tamandun that, you know, are not following the rules. And the more noise there is, I think the more seriously these issues will be taken into consideration, up to a point where one would hope it becomes natural. So rather than having to have a knee-jerk response to every single complaint, you become proactive because you know that, hey, if I don't do this, then it's going to be an issue and I don't want my boss to say that I'm not doing my job. Mm. So I think enforcement is a continuous process. There is always going to be some feedback loop, and the positive feedback loop I think will be helpful in terms of ensuring that we are going to be able to enforce things properly. The other thing I would say is that generally across the board as well, we think a lot about preparing policies and putting policies in place, but perhaps we don't spend as much time in terms of the operationalization of things. And once again, it's kind of across the board. We need to spend more time and I think resources as well in enforcement. So when it comes to Ministry of Health, for example, there is recognition of that. And I think one of the key things that we have to look into is whether we can provide more funding, more resources for the individuals who are in charge of enforcement.
Is there a resource issue?
I think in terms of government, there's definitely a resource issue because we are at this point in time not in the best fiscal strength. I mean, you just reported on the Bursa and, you know, there's issues about the ringgit. So I think generally speaking, we are not in the best state of finances. So of course, every single ringgit counts, every single cent counts. And in a ministry as large as the Ministry of Health, we have to be very mindful of where we are spending every single ringgit and cent.
Mm, I think these are monies well spent, well invested if we can beef up enforcement. But speaking of, the economy, you have certain quarters in business who are against the idea of the generational endgame proposal because they say that it will take businesses away from them. I can't make the connection myself, to be honest. I don't think selling cigarettes and vape products should form a significant part of your business. But, you know, coffee shops, kedai runcit operators, they have been pretty vocal about the impact on their businesses. How's the ministry, countering that narrative?
Once again, there is constant engagement. And I think once again, there's that reassurance that nobody's going to make anyone stop smoking tomorrow. No one's actually going to stop any sales tomorrow. This is a generational game. So it's about stopping people who are currently non-smokers, non-vapers from ever becoming one. So the impact in terms of income and revenue should be much, much, much more down the line as opposed to anything over the next couple of years. There were very similar concerns when the UK banned smoking in pubs. And it was all about, hey, a pub is where you go for a beer, where you go for cigarettes, and how can you take away that culture, that tradition, so on and so forth. But the government went ahead. And what they found was that going, say, about a year later, there was a study showing how there was actually increased revenue and more people going to pubs because it became more family friendly. People found that it smelled better. And as a consequence, the businesses were actually doing better. So it doesn't automatically mean that you're going to have a drop in terms of customers, because you might actually be attracting a whole new bunch of customers. And going back to your point about people smoking in restaurants, most people, I think, were a little bit concerned when Dr. Zoll at the time wanted to ban smoking in public places. And once again, it was a huge political issue. But 1 year later, I think most people are thankful to the point where now they're complaining when people are actually smoking in these areas.
Mm. Now, earlier you mentioned that there were concerns about the previous iteration of this bill and efforts have been made to ensure that things like possession is no longer an offence, reduction of the fines to 500 ringgit, no body searching, if I'm not mistaken. Now, what is your sense of how MPs are feeling? Have they been briefed about this new bill? What other concerns do you expect?
The past couple of months, well, actually, no, the past 1 month or so, Dr. Zaliha and team have been engaging with various MPs. So there was one session for government MPs, there was one session for opposition MPs. Generally across the board, I would say that there is actually a lot of support. Once again, that is with the caveat that we spend time explaining what the bill is actually about, explaining about the differences between the original and the most recent draft. And moving forward next week, there'll be more sessions where, first of all, we'll be speaking to the new Health Parliamentary Select Committee. And secondly, we'll be discussing and explaining things to MPs as well in Parliament.
Earlier, there were also suggestions that there should be a sunset clause in the bill. Will the new bill contain that?
I do not. I'm trying to comment without explaining what's in the bill.
And saying the same thing again.
Saying the same thing again. Not that I know of.
Okay. But what actually is our final endgame when it comes to addressing smoking and vaping? The generational perspective I get. But what do we want to achieve when it comes to tobacco and vape control?
Ideally, you want it to be something that affects 5% or less of the population. So we are in a situation where a lot of our medical and healthcare issues are due to NCDs, hypertension and smoking being the key risk factors when it comes to hypertension, stroke, all your lung diseases. So I think there is that idea that, you know, we're spending so much of money on treating things, where else we should be spending as much time and effort in preventing things from happening in the first place. So I think the end goal there is that we want to ensure that our population is healthy, we have more productive lives, and we have happier lives as a consequence of not being addicted to a product.
Are you very confident that the bill can be tabled and passed?
I would say I'm more confident today than I was the last time we talked about this, because once again, there has been new iteration of the actual bill itself. So it's something that I think, once again, is a little bit more accepted by all the MPs in Parliament in terms of our engagement, in terms of Dr. Zaliha pushing forward the argument both within Cabinet and with the MPs, her colleagues in Parliament. It's been generally positive. Of course, there will always, it's not always going to be 100%, and there will always be some who have some concerns, but I think I would say there are far more positive responses this time around compared to last year.
So your message to MPs who will be debating and voting on the bill when... You're very confident when it is tabled in Parliament.
I was confident last year as well, wasn't I?
Let's not go there. So what's your message to them?
I think my message is we need to take into account public health considerations as much as other factors when it comes to pushing through a bill like this. And perhaps I'll take a short period of time to explain that even economically and from a financial point of view, it is far more beneficial for us as a country to actually stop these things from progressing rather than spending money and billions on the consequences of the addiction that we are seeing. So I think the only thing that I feel is going to make things a little bit murky is all the miscommunication and perhaps the fake news that's out there with regards to, as you pointed out, the impact on the economy, the impact on businesses. These are arguments that come up every so often. And once again, it's not something that is very specific to Malaysia, but it's a global argument that is usually pushed forward by those with vested interests.
So we will be watching what happens with the Control of Smoking Product for Public Health Bill 2023. And thank you so much for joining me in the studio today, Dr. Helmi Hajamaidin, consultant respiratory physician and special advisor to the Minister of Health here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.